Blog Talk Radio.
We strolled through fields all wet with rain, and back along the lane again, staring at sunshine in the sweet summertime. The way that young lovers do, I kissed you on the left once more, and we said goodbye at your front door in the night time. Yeah, that's the right time to feel the way that young lovers do. Then we sat down our arms and dreamed of the way that we were.
Album. Anyhow, so this is your mother's medicine cabinet. This is your host, Frank Reardon. We are in the third show of season two. Show will go to March. I kind of forget who's next week, but this week we have all the way from England, Maria Gornell, with her new book, and she's going to read us some poems, and I'm going to grill her with some questions. So let's bring her on. I think this is her. Hello?
Hello.
Are you available, Maria Gornell?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. You're all British and all. You got the accent. So how is it at the wee hours of the morning over there?
It's all right. Nice and quiet.
Quiet? Is it
Yeah.
That's cool. So are you, like, barely alive?
No, I'm really
wide awake.
Yeah, I'm wide awake.
Cool.
I took your advice and got some wine to keep me going.
Yes. That's I would never be able to stay awake this late for a show. I appreciate you staying awake. Unless like there was wine or too much coffee involved.
Yeah,
4 o'clock in the morning is not tea strong. But so we've got you for this amount of time, so why don't you tell us about your new book and what's it called and all that?
Okay, it's called In the Absence of Wing, and it's published with, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Ebaki Press. Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't know how to think either.
And it's just about my life, really, going from kind of when I first started writing, when I had a breakdown, and that's what led to the writing, and just how things have gotten, you know, how I've grown since then.
Oh yeah. Is it like encompass? Did you say your whole life, or just like a area of your life?
Yeah. So well, some of it goes from childhood. And then the rest is just like the period between writing, I suppose.
Yeah. So, do you want to start us off with one? Anyone you want? Then we can just go
okay.
from there.
Okay, I was going to start with this one. I haven't read this before because it's long.
Okay.
It's called Irish Crossing, and it's just basically about when my great grandmother came over from Ireland to Liverpool. Forgotten scrolls from Tara float amongst drowned Irish syllables, trapped inside bottles, amongst driftwood, seaweed tightly spun, strangling ancestors' cries that beseeches thee, Patrick, calling his name out into black seas to feed the eels and snakes of miracles failed. Thoughts bubbling to surface, pushing against the powerful force of dreams, submerged out into the wild abandon of waves, crashing with the force of Mother Nature's violent fury. I imagine arthritic knees kneeling against cold stone, obedient congregations whispering sounds and belly rumblings, holding the dish of coins overflowing, cough it up in black swales, take this, drink this, last supper of bearings wrung out into the thick green foam of sea. Scattered in the ashes of potato skin famines as inland grows pale in view, you trace the salt tears of rivers hoping to carry us somewhere better. Never, no never, wanting to witness pride from shoulders disappear as you wrap these river urchins in strong, safe love. Tiny flickers of light like shards of glass on a black horizon, into the mersey you softly go. And I have stood long searching amongst empty ports forsaken, wondering on the journey, haunted by those foghorns, imagining slave ships, the cracks of whip that hold no connection to your heart, except the immigrant rivers that carried you to no rooms for the Irish, dirty grey backstreet slums and gangs that got you drunk then robbed you of half shillings, left drunken stupor in streets that did not know your name. The children you reared who turned their backs on roots, the religion that saved you into categories of saints, sinners and heathens. It's not hard to imagine what might have been if the filthy English greed had not appeared on your horizons. A shamrock, mistaken for a four-leaf clover, floats on the breeze with secrets to tell.
Wow. So, that was pretty good, man. I enjoyed that one. So
it's a bit long.
No, it's all right. There's plenty of time to
read.
No,
me on my voice. Use my voice reading it.
No, I can completely understand you. Like, where I come from out in Boston, there's a lot of English and Irish and Scottish people live there, so you like get accustomed to like hearing the accents and understanding the words. So I pretty much got it. I followed the accent. It was pretty good. So I'm gonna ask you a question here. Have you always written poetry, or is it something newer to you?
I only started writing poetry, I think, in 2006. But I wrote it when I was younger, but, you know, just messing about, not serious.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly wrote stories when I was younger, but then I don't know what happened, I just gave it up. And like I said, it came back to me when I had a bit of a breakdown and I was going through a bad time, I just started writing.
It started out as like a release for you, and then eventually you just get practicing. Is that kind of?
Do
you have like a method that you use, or do you just like write when you're inspired to do so?
Yeah, just like, when I'm inspired, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I used to write. Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I did used to write every day, but now I don't write as much. It's like, you know, maybe once a week. I don't know why it just got that way.
And you had, like, did you have, like, a book release reading recently?
Yeah.
How did that go?
Yeah, it went really good. I was really nervous. I thought no one was going to turn up, but in the end, I was surprised. A lot of people came, and it was a good night.
That's cool. Yeah, it's that's one of the scariest parts, I think, about giving any reading I ever gave was, like, I've always felt like no one was worth even showing up, like, and then, like, you know, you get a good amount of people, because you also have to think it's poetry, you know, so... There's only so many people that want to hear it. From what I hear, I don't know if this is true or not, but from what I heard from, like, Dan Fonte and those guys was that, like, there's a bigger appreciation for the art form over there in Europe than there is here in America, where everything is plastic.
Really? I thought it was better than America.
Oh, really?
I don't know.
Dan told me that, like, he goes to, like, Italy and Germany and stuff, and he says that people seem to have more of an appreciation, I guess. I mean, I don't know. Well, maybe it's just the same everywhere.
Yeah, it's just we get a lot of slam here, and I can't stand that. I don't know if you get that in America as well, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not
slam
a big fan
poetry.
Of it. Yeah, it's like poetry for points or something like that. I'm not a big fan.
Yeah, I hate it.
So you've become quite the world traveler. Has any of this traveling inspired you to write stuff?
Well, I didn't travel for years. I did when I was younger, but I've been going to Morocco a lot recently. And yeah, because I was going through a period where I felt like, you know, I couldn't write anymore. Like, I was writing the same old shit. Traveling helped me, inspired me.
Yeah, it seems like, I think that, like, I've known you through the internet realm for a while. I've never, like, this is the first time I've actually spoke to you, but when you read somebody on the internet, like yourself or anybody, you can always tell when there's changes coming, you know, changes coming in somebody, and that's always a interesting thing to see and to watch, or you get bored of writing, like, how many times can I write about, Frank, how many times can you write about a nervous breakdown or alcohol? Like, you know, it's just like evolving, I suppose. But hold on a second. If anybody that's listening wants to call in and ask Maria a question, feel free. Jeff, I know you usually always call in, so don't call in the last 5 minutes. Call in sometime during the show. So if you want to give us another
Who's
poem
Jeff?
Right now. Jeff's
okay.
He's a regular caller, and he sometimes calls the last 5 minutes when I'm trying to close the show, and I ask him to call during the show. So But if you want to give us another poem right now, that'd be swell. Anything you want.
Okay. Okay, I'm gonna read this. It's a bit of a mad one. It's called Night Terror, and how it came about. I had this really weird dream, and I've been reading about, you know, that serial killer. Is it Bundy or something? The one who made he made purses out of women's vulvas.
Oh, Ed Gein?
Yeah, I was reading about him.
Yeah.
And then I had this horrible dream. So I wrote this poem anyway. Wind carries psychosis, collected in dream catches. Man ranting mania, ashen vein, fists grip rap hard. Sorry, grip rat hard, thrust limp labia. He turns to me, eyes cold, soulless, tells me he wants to mutilate vulvas, carve flesh into cute, tiny purses. Eyes my disgust, senses my terror that sends the limp flesh cocked hard. My panic, a turn on the thrill of the chase as I run stricken, clouds of filthy pigeons and people disperse. In catatonic trance, he invades my space, half monster, half boy, stalking my shadow, raving mad obscenities, pleading to belong, leaving particles of fairy tale myths unexplored on the sill of dawn.
Wow. Ed Gein, he's a pretty demented guy. He never went to prison, that guy. He died in like an insane asylum. Tell you quickly, he lived in Wisconsin, a state here, and he would dig up people in the cemetery and stitch clothes together. And he'd run out of fresh bodies, so he started killing people. So like, he was a gross man. I don't probably somewhat like the equivalent close to of like that guy you had in England, like Albert Fish, I think his name was. I don't know, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyhow. So how could anybody get your book if they wanted it? Would they have to contact the Rinpoche Press or you? Or?
Yeah, they could, but they could get it from me as well, maybe, if they contact me on Facebook, because I arranged to do it through PayPal.
Yeah.
I have got some books here. Otherwise,
cool.
Yeah.
You're still there?
I forgot to send you a copy as well, didn't I?
Yeah, that's okay. Like, I don't know. So sometimes people forget to send me, sometimes I ask for the paper or, like, via an email, so I have an idea, but sometimes people forget, and it's nice to hear the stuff when you might have not have heard it or read it via,
yeah.
But that's fine. Do you have any like other plans for other readings, or are you just kind of just going with it?
No, not at the moment. I haven't done any for a while, and I've done like 3 in the past 2 weeks, which is a lot for me, because I hadn't done anything for months. So I need to get back to
3 in the last 2 weeks isn't bad at all. I've done like 3 in 2 years. So, you know, it's just, you know, you get locked away in like a strange little place in the world where there's no art at all. You don't get to read very much. But, you got to travel for that, and, you know, poets, they don't make much money, and traveling ain't that easy. Did you live near major metropolitan areas to give readings, or do you have to travel?
But it's not a very big poetry scene here.
Yeah.
But there's places you're quite near that you can get to, yeah.
Oh, that's cool. It's not bad. So, when you were growing up, or when you started writing poetry, who are some of the people that influenced you the most? They can be alive or dead. It doesn't matter.
I'm not sure. When I first started, you know, when I said, like, the breakdown, I was reading a lot of Pekowski because he just made me laugh.
Yeah.
And I could, like, identify with, who else? Neruda. I like Neruda. And even, like, Sylvia Plath. What's that other woman's name, the American poet who committed suicide?
Anne Sexton.
Yeah, I love her. Yeah.
She was, I always like to say that, because it's true, when I lived in Boston, she was buried right behind my house. And, I lived, like, right next to the cemetery that had her and E.E. Cummings and Eugene O'Neill. It was a pretty weird little cemetery. It's like a bunch of dead writers up in there. But, yeah, she used to get, like, this, like, and I don't know if I believe in all this stuff, but you're, like, sitting near her grave or go near it, it's just like a little plaque in the ground. And
yeah,
I'd get like all depressed. Like, like it was just like depressive vibes going on there. So I didn't hang out there too much. But yeah, so, well, that's cool. Yeah, everybody's got the stuff that they like and what inspires them and whatnot. I think there's too much. Too much judgment in the art world, but I've gave up myself on fighting the judgment on what's good or what's bad because it's useless to do so. You like what you like. So
I mean, I'm inspired even by some hip hop and like Gil Scott-Heron, and I loved him when I was younger. You know, he's kind of a poet but more spoken word. So I like that sort of stuff, too.
Yeah, that's what's quite popular in America is the, like, he was kind of a different breed than the typical slam poets we have. But there's, like, good, like, jazz and hip-hop kind of, like, music poets. I don't really know what to call them. There's some good ones with some excellent stories. And I think it's the scene that I don't like, the slam poet scene. Like, one time I went to a reading, and I thought it was an actual reading. And I got on stage, and I was pretty much, like, booed off the stage because I didn't know it was a slam poetry reading. I'm like, oh. Couldn't hear a pin drop. But, so why don't you, like, give us another one?
Okay. Okay, this one is called At the Beginning. Let's put it all together. She sang, an innocent twirl in a 70s dress, at Butlin's camp, surrounded by dysfunctional families, terror and drunken debauchery. Her eyes akin to a waterfall, an ugly duckling with chopped off hair. They could take a boat out on the lake, row it gently down the stream, merrily singing for mercy. It looks like a fairy tale possible from a child's perspective, doe-eyed, singing till a sleeping beauty awakens for a kiss with sunken lips. Daddy is the king of the castle, something to be feared with guarded heroism, for you know he'll shatter every misconception. Every china cup carefully set in place to play tea time, and Jean, your imaginary friend, will be sat on and crushed. Mummy will rage, spit fire like a dragon, fight him tooth and nail, but his fist will flatten her eyes in one blow, while we look on, hoping for an orange streak through the trees. The one that's kept us company every day in hell. Let's put it all together was a dream long ago.
Wow. What was that one about? if you don't mind saying.
It was about going on holiday. You know, like, have you ever heard of Butlin's Camp?
No.
You know, like in the film Dirty Dancing, where they go to like a camp, you know, all that entertainment.
Yeah.
It's sort of, yeah, it's like that. And it was just about going on holiday with the family. It was supposed to be a holiday, and my mum and dad were just getting drunk and fighting, and my brother and I were like just left terrified of her.
So you seem to like have quite the change about you. I don't know if it's because you're traveling or you found love or things of that nature. Does like is it are you is it affecting your writing, or is because you said you don't write as much? Sometimes I've noticed that when you change an environment and a new feeling, you have to come accustomed to it enough to understand to write about it, or do you just write out the? Are you like going through that kind of process now, or do you just wait for it to come to you?
I think it's getting used to being feeling happy and content instead of crazy and all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the writing was like a release before. So I was used to, you know, needing to write to get it out. But now, I don't know, it's hard to write about being happy, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't want it to sound like sappy, because there can be like extremely sappiness when you're happy. But like, for example, like I've gotten to the point where I got sick of writing things, like I said earlier, but now I just like take myself into nature, and I've got these observational sort of meditative, I don't know, kind of poems to like confine other things, like, you know, to write about, because how many times am I going to write about being drunk at the pub, you know? So I just like, you know, it will come to you. It comes to you. I mean, I'm sure I don't have to tell you that, but it will eventually come.
Yeah, I've been reading your stuff. I've really enjoyed it as well.
Oh, thank you.
Like the change.
Well, like I was interviewing like Rob Plath last week, and we kind of talked about like the same thing about how.
Mm.
So you just kind of have to search for that, those other things sometimes, because there's going to be a balance, because there's no such thing as like 100% love, and there's no such thing as 100% nihilism. Like, there's a balance in life. We all get depressed sometimes. We all get happy sometimes, you know. I guess you got to, I don't know, if you want to write truth, you got to find a balance somewhere. I don't know. Because eventually, if you don't, you'll start writing like Pablo Neruda about how much you love your socks. But so we're at the halfway point. So if anybody wants to call in, feel free. I know sometimes we don't get callers, but you know, feel free. Ask Maria a question if you like. I know there's people listening. I can see them. But anyways, so why don't you give us another one?
Okay. This one I wrote is about like. It's about, like, how, you know, when you're in that place where you're writing all the dark stuff and you feel like you're holding it all inside. It was about that, how it felt. It's called Deliverance. Dusk, darker than black. Blue swirls of mist swallow the legs beneath my altar. Rituals and poetry is just the ash. A blue deep purple leaves stains. Horizontal shape-shifting curtains expose the blue rose of womb. I live under the gaze of prophets who call me to task. All this receiving and bearing down fast, birding images that both uplift, suck out the juice till I am crone. If I were an artist, I would paint the earth a sea-green froth so that I may choke, unseen, floating in its murky waters. My heart refusing to wear a yoke of shame, my womb sunken with no more babies to burn.
Wow. That's pretty good. What was the...
Sorry, I just dropped it there.
That's okay. So what kind of wine did you indulge in this evening?
Oh, Shiraz. Australian.
Did you get Yellowtail?
No, it's just Australian Shiraz. Oh, what's the name of it? Can't see. Barossa.
Oh, yeah. We get this Australian wine called Yellowtail. It's, like, real cheap, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, I've seen
that. So it's good.
I've never tasted it.
Yeah, it makes me want to have some, but I don't know. I just drank some tea, so I don't want to follow it up with some wine. It's only
you still drink whiskey?
Oh, no. I've had a few drop offs, but I've like kept away from the liquor for the most part.
Mm.
You know, I don't drink as much as I used to. I drink like once a week now. You know, sometimes twice, or if there's like an event to do so. But you know, there's only so much you can do sitting in your house getting totally annihilated all the time before you're like start getting the shakes. Start shaking. I don't know. I try to keep away from it because I like it too much, you know. So
yeah,
beer never had that effect on me, so I drink that still sometimes. But you know, but I can't write either when I'm drunk. Some people can do that, but I can't. I think I write
an awesome thing.
Yeah, I think you get this awesome poem when you're drunk, and then you read it the next day, and I'm like, what garbage. But
I can write good if I smoke marijuana though.
Oh yeah. I wish I could get some. we don't have any weed up here. I mean, I'm sure we do, but I only know April here. I don't know anybody else in this town, and I can't go out in the street asking who has weed.
Where do you live? Missouri, is it?
No, North Dakota, up by Canada. It's already like in the 20s, and it's cold, and it was kind of snowing the other day, and I'm like, what the hell? We don't get much of the fall here. The fall lasts for like a week, and then it goes like straight to like winter. So it's not for me. We're trying to save up to get out of here. There's like nobody here. We live in a town with like 30,000 people, but nobody, hundreds of miles in each direction. There's like no towns.
It's
all flat farmland. Yeah, you got to drive like 200 miles to get to the mountains. So
sounds good, though.
No, not really, because the only thing there is to do is drink or go to the shopping center. There's nothing else to do in this town. But I guess you could become like born again Christian if you wanted to, but I don't want to do that. So. So we got out. Okay, here's the question I ask everybody, and it's a total opinion question. Do you think the internet serves more of a good purpose or more of a bad purpose when it comes to literature?
I did think it was, but I'm beginning to think that you've got to be careful, especially with Facebook.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't see, the writing community, it's not the same, is it, like it was on MySpace? I mean, it doesn't seem like people are as productive, or maybe it's just me.
Oh, yeah, it definitely has it's a double-edged sword is what most people like to say, because I wouldn't know certain people, or I wouldn't have found out about certain presses or readings if it wasn't for the internet. So it's good for that.
Oh, yeah.
Because not all of us can live in New York City or Paris where everything's happening, you know. But, yeah, it gets out of control with the dramatics and craziness. I don't see it as much anymore because I keep away from it, you know. So dramatics that were going on that were a while back. So if it's still going on, I don't know, and I like it that way. But yeah, so do you just like write poetry, or is that, or do you, you know, write other like prose or
prose and sometimes short stories. But I'm not as confident like with the stories. Need to practice more.
Yeah, it's just like anything else. But how did your poetry collection come about with the Ambachi Press? How did that come about? How did this happen?
I just sent Alan, you know, Alan Clark, just a few poems, and about 5 poems in the beginning, and he said, okay, just send me some more, and I'll have a look at them, and he accepted them. I think the first time I asked him, he kind of told me, no way, come back in a year. So I did, and, you know.
Did he tell you to come back in a year, like, to practice more, or did he say, like, wait till it's done?
Yeah, he just kind of said I wasn't ready, which I think he was right.
It needed more editing or something?
Yeah, and, like, the stuff I'd sent him as well, it wasn't that good when I look back at it.
Yeah, I do that. Like, I just got, like, a proof back for my next book, and some of the poems that I thought were brilliant kind of got butchered up by the editor, and so I was like, what the fuck? So, you know, but now that I was looking at it, you know, I could see why those, like, 6 or 7 or so didn't fit, so you kind of, like, you got to be, you know, not the pompous artist when it comes to stuff like that, because sometimes things really don't belong. Maybe that was good that he did that.
Yeah. You can't be attached to your way, can you?
Yeah. So, why don't you give us another poem?
Okay. Okay, this one's called Zimmerman Blues, and it's about when my brother and I went to see Bob Dylan. It's just about a night in Liverpool, really. We went to see Bob Dylan and we went to see a jazz band. Highways of youth revisited. A decade or two later, nostalgia and yesterday's dreams weep on horizon. We're on our way to see Zimmerman Brothers bootleg series blares from speakers in car. They're laughing and singing. I'm gazing out windows into the years wasted, needing a joint and a bottle of something strong to chase the blues away. My heart skips a beat to the words of blind Willie McTell as we drive towards Riverfront. They're buzzing and I'm, well, subdued, worn out, a fading gale, woman of poems. The sunset, a majestic orange glow on horizon. We fall in love again with a city that sometimes brings us shame. Zimmerman's words ring out ironically against the capitalist stadium. His croaky voice, distant figure, a pink smudge on horizon. He warms our scouse hearts with rolling stone, just like a woman, and then a treat of something in the way she moves. Laughing at the irony of bare-chested scallies dancing like they're back in acid days. The pungent smell of skunk filling the air. Later, 5 of us squash like sardines in car, make our way to the Caledonia to hear Marley Chingus, the new breed. The beat-filled streets alive with new youth passion and no recollection of riots. We dance and bob our heads to 60s jazz, soak up the melancholy blues of Coltrane before responsibility, closed bars and exhaustion lead us back home.
So, where do you, do you work your imagery? Is it, something you have to work at a while? Or do your poems, kind of come pretty quick and naturally?
It depends on the poem, really. Sometimes it does, and other times I have to work on it, yeah.
Yeah. Do they usually come out, in the first draft, or do you, have to go back?
I usually have to go back, I think.
So in what ways has travel in the world, Morocco, inspired you at all?
Just a different culture, I suppose. The whole going out into the desert. I didn't even like sand. So everyone was laughing at me when I went because I said, I don't even like sand. What am I doing in the desert? And it was just it was a really healing place. I just sat there and cried the first time. And then on my 40th birthday, we went out with camels and camped out all night, and it was a full moon. And some of the nomads, you would call them, were drumming and playing guitars under the full moon. I was just wow, am I dreaming this? It was just amazing.
Did you spend in the city there, or did you just go to the desert?
In Marrakesh, that's the big city. That's where you fly into. That's totally mad. The roads, are just... There's no traffic lights on often. You just gotta get over the road as quick as you can.
That's kind of cool. I was wondering what that would be like. I don't know. I've never. So does it have an actual bad rap that American politicians like to give it, a bad part of the world? That's what they like to tell us here.
But, I don't know, because of the Muslim thing, maybe. But Morocco is, one of the most developed Arab countries. Especially in Marrakesh, it's more cosmopolitan, I suppose. But when you go out into the desert, it's really, you're going back in time, kind of. But people are just living so simply, they're so poor, and it just makes you humble, I think.
That's almost I wish I could experience stuff like that, because it's almost I could think of 100 things that I would want to write about, the simplicity of it, So, this is a simple way to create poems in a simple way, I think. But then again, what do I know? But I think that sounds an awesome thing. I've been in deserts, but only ones in America, And the only time that I did travel out of the country, when I went to Asia, I was just young and in my 20s, and all I did was want to party. So I didn't get to experience it in the way that I would want to now.
Where did you go, Asia?
Thailand. The 90s. Long time.
You just partied.
Pretty much. We were in Bangkok for a few days, and then we were in this hut on this beach, but it wasn't a beach, where it's this lagoon that you pay $100 American for a month. We stayed for 2.5-3 weeks, so it was, I don't know. If I was there now, I'd be in the mountains out there in the northern parts and going to the cool temples and stuff. But I didn't do that in my early 20s. I just wanted to, smoke hash and drink cheap Thai beer. I didn't want to do anything else.
That's like me when I went to America when I was 18, you know, and worked in a summer camp.
Uh-huh.
And worked in a summer camp in Wisconsin Dells. And I was supposed to, like, go traveling with other people. We were going to go to, you know, California and go to Mexico. And I just spent all my money drinking every night. So when it came to travel and I couldn't go, I just had to go to New York and then go home.
To get the American experience, Wisconsin was the greatest place to choose.
I know.
Yeah. That's too bad. Like, I live two states over from there right now to the west, but it's not, like, my favorite part of the north central or the Midwest. North is not my favorite part of the U.S. You should have went to, like, definitely save your money and went to California.
Yeah.
That would have been a good experience. But, hey, well, you know, you live in a part of the world that I would die to go to, but I don't know how times are there, but times here are just terrible for most people. So we can't, like, really go anywhere these days unless you got some big job, which I don't have. So,
yeah.
You know, they don't
Same,
let you travel.
Yeah, it's gotten really bad.
Yeah, it's just, I could imagine trying to go to England and it would be like, I think it's something like it's close to $1,600 just for one round trip ticket. And then you got to stay at all kinds of places and eat food. And it's just too much. So, anyways, I'm just babbling. I apologize. But why don't you give us another one of your poems?
Okay. So I'll read one about Morocco then. We've got a few in here about. Okay, this one's called Memories and Delusions. A purple silk Mali scarf, fragranced by amber, floating with dreams. A prayer to Allah echoes through dust, and all the dogs are barking, howling in the moonlight, an abundance of stars to light the way. Eyes penetrate within, fingers that strum magic chords. Drum calls to the ancestors lead us safely into trance. The beast inside set free to dance under African skies, to really be seen. Here, a purple silk Mali scarf floats on the wind. A memory, a smile that lit the way, a kiss that flickered the flame deep down in the belly. A brick wall to keep it small and safe. A cocoon of numbness, an illusion. And I giving my heart away. Standing in line like maids of honor and catch it when I say, beloved.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely see the movement from some of the earlier stuff you read to you get there, like from Dreams of Ed Gein to Moroccan Dreams. Do these things, like, really happen, or were these things that you envisioned, like the scarf floating around?
Yeah, it's just I bought this scarf there that I wore as a turban. And everyone was calling me Queen of the Desert. And I brought it home with me, and it was just like something to keep a memory.
So do you have to, like, or you think you're going to, like, pick up and move yourself there one day?
I don't know. I think I'd like to, but I think it would be hard to live there. Because I don't think there's many jobs for a start, and, like, the money they get is even worse than what we get.
Yeah.
Like,
you got a child too, correct? A daughter, don't you?
Yeah, but she's 18 now, like.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I'm still supporting her because she's at college and.
Yeah, I just was gonna. Not my business. I was gonna say it might be hard to move with a kid. I don't know. But
I'll just throw it on the streets.
Well, you know, you never know. You seem to be taking a journey and changing a lot in your life now, so you never know what you'll be in 5 years. You might be traveling to Hong Kong or something by then. And I think that's the best part about life is the not knowing, you know, because you waste so much of your life thinking about the future and what's going to happen and what's going to happen. I wasted a lot of my years doing that, and I still do sometimes, but... Just living in the moment, I think, is the best thing you can do, I think. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what everyone keeps telling me.
it's a hard thing to do, but it's just takes practice like anything else.
Yeah.
Beat out that depression, because there's one thing I found that everybody, I've been doing this show since last April, and if there's one thing everybody has, no matter what type of poetry they write, is there's a level of depression someone suffers from. So I guess it's something everybody has in common. So we're down to under 10 minutes. You want us, give us, another poem, and then we can talk out a minute or two?
Okay. I'll read another one about Morocco, then.
Okay.
This one's called Inshallah, and Inshallah... If in Morocco, if someone says, yeah, I will see you tomorrow, you would say to them, Inshallah, which means God willing. And this the first time I went to the desert, and this nomad took me out on the camel, and I was like depressed then and crying, and he just gave me the space to sit there, and he told me everything, you know. Kind of said, happiness will come, inshallah, and that's what the poem's about.
Yeah.
All through the night, there is a thud that beats a rhythm 1,000 years old. A bittersweet song it is. My eyes have witnessed the universe on fire with my desire. I have nourished the desert with my tears. And you sit with me patient, holding the space, making it safe for my body to crumble, to melt under desert sun, to evaporate into ground. And you lead me through silence, held my eyes and whispered beautiful, told me of the simple life, living off the fat of the land, fed me figs from a tree, promise that it will come, inshallah.
Oh, that was a good ending.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was a good way to end that poem, and I think it's a good poem to end the show on. So if they want to, if whoever listening wants to get your book or find out about any happenings with you, do they just... find you on Facebook or...
Facebook's the best place to find me. I'm always there.
You can go to Facebook or you can go to Hibachi. I don't think one of us are saying it right, but HibachiPress.com. You should pick up Maria's book. I really like the contrast of her earlier days of depression until... I really like that last poem ended. I think it's a good poem to end on. And we're winding down to a few minutes here. So, you know, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show and staying up till 4 a.m. in England to be on our show.
No, thank you. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's no problem. I've known you for a long time, and I enjoyed having you on. So, I don't know. I guess I'll see you in the virtual world.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, <All right>. Frank.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, good night.
And that was Maria Gornell, and you could find her, if you don't know her, through me, on Facebook. You can, she's one of my friends on there, or to look her up on the internet or hibachipress.com on your book. If you liked what you heard, it was some really good stuff. If you're out there in her neck of the woods and she gives a reading, you should really check her out. I can't remember who, I think the next week's guest is Neil McRae, but I'll be posting it when I post up the show. But thank you for listening. Thank you for the 3,000 plus listeners that between me, Frankie Metro, and Brian Fouget, we've all had a lot of luck here. And I'm sure Michelle McDaniel thanks you, kind of like the head chef over at the Literary Underground. But I don't know. We've got a 4 months or so left of this show, and then it's closing down. But stay tuned. All right. What the fuck ever.